Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for Friday, May 26, 2023. On today's episode, we're going to have a special water cooler. This is Slash Film editorial director Peter Ceretta. Joining me on today's podcast is Slash Film senior news editor Jacob Hall.
Hello, hello.
Editor-in-chief film critic Chris Evangelista.
Oh, hello.
Editors Ben Pearson.
Hey, what's going on?
And Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
And back for a special appearance, Inverse.com entertainment editor, Y-Tran Bui.
Hey, everyone.
We got the whole gang back together.
Yeah.
This is like a blast from the past right here.
Well, as you can probably tell from the title of this episode, we're here for, you know, it's happy that we're all reuniting, but we're doing so under somewhat sad circumstances because, Peter, you're leaving Slash Film.
Yeah, this is my last day with Slash. I've had Slash Film in my life for the last 18 years. And this is tomorrow is going to be a day. It's going to be the first day that Slash Film is not part of my current life, which is crazy to me. It's just, I don't even know what that's going to be like.
So you started the site in 2005, is that right?
Yeah, I think it was like August of 2005. And when I started it, it was like, I mean, there was other movie news sites out there. There was like Ain't It Cool and Joe Blow. But I don't know. It was a very different movie blog or news universe at that point.
Yeah, I was looking up things that happened in 2005. The first ever YouTube video was uploaded. It was called Me at the Zoo. I don't know if anybody's ever seen that one. Sounds like a classic. The word microblogging entered the lexicon for the first time. And some movies that came out that year, Sin City, Batman Begins, Wedding Crashers, Fantastic Four, Elektra, The 40-Year-Old Virgin, and Star Wars Episode III, Revenge of the Sith. So, Peter, your run at Slash Film went from one era of Star Wars all the way through into, arguably, you could say, like, what, two or three more eras of Star Wars or something by this point.
This is making me feel really old. But I don't know. Slash Film itself has had like so many eras to it, which is crazy to me because when I started the site, you know, I loved movies. I just wanted to write about movies and I wanted to share, you know, every year I would go to Sundance. I used to volunteer at Sundance. I wanted to share the smaller movies that people might not hear about. I wanted to talk about the big blockbusters that I loved. And 98% of the content on the site was like me posting 12 news articles a day. And I don't know, it's crazy how big the site has grown over the years and how many different voices, how many different outlooks, how many different, I don't know. I feel like we've had probably like three eras to Slash Film. With the current being this, I'm not sure if people know this, but 2 years ago, I sold the site to a company called Static Media, who owned a bunch of sites. Ben, what other sites does Static Media own?
Oh, geez.
Looper, Mashed, Grunge.
Tasting Table is their new big hit. It's feel like the Slash Film of food, if you're interested in checking out Tasting Table.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, when you do something for this long, you do something for 18 years. The other thing is, with all the eras of Slash Film, like, you know, I got into it to write about movies. I was so excited about movies. And at a certain point, it became, you know, me being a boss, which is not something I got into Slash Film to do, and being in charge of everything and doing payroll and doing taxes and being in charge of all that stuff. And it became less about me talking about movies and more of doing that. So I think even before the pandemic, there was started getting into, you know, we launched Ordinary Adventures, which is a theme park YouTube channel, or travel and theme park and food YouTube channel that I do with my girlfriend Kitra. And it kind of reinvigorated me, because actually even before Slash Film, I wanted to be a filmmaker. I wanted to, you know, make visual content. And I think, you know, picking up the camera gave me like it scratched that itch a little bit. And at that point I was kind of thinking about maybe selling the site, and then the pandemic hit, and that was dark days for all of us. But like overnight our ad sales went from, you know, because who advertises on a movie site? Movies. What comes out during a pandemic? You know, what's not filming during a pandemic? Movies. And ad sales like tanked overnight. And like it went from, you know, Slash Film being a profitable enterprise to me being like, do I have to let people go? Do I have to, you know, we're losing money. Like, not just like, you know, a drip of, it was like, you know, the water was rushing out of the bathtub, if that makes sense. Thankfully, everything recovered. Everything's great. You know, after that time, Static approached me and I was like, you know what? Now is maybe the time to leave. Maybe now is the time to say goodbye to this. And because I wasn't even really a large part of the editorial voice of the site. I think you guys would, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but even when I was like, you know, large part of the editorial of the site, and this might be a testament how bad of a business person I am, I kind of let you guys do your thing. I encouraged you, any voice you had, if you loved a movie, you hated a movie, like never aligned with what, it never had to align with what I thought or what even like I thought would be good traffic wise for the site.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what are your guys' memories of Slash Film in that era?
It was definitely a really different time. I mean, yeah. I started Slash Film in 2015. You know, you hired me as a news writer and I was working, you know, directly with you and Angie Han. And when Angie left to Greener Pasture, she's been to 3 or 4 different outlets at this point. She keeps on getting bumped up the rankings, it feels like. Apparently, I don't know if it was you or Angie who recommended me for her old editor position, but it's just been one of those cases where I've been deeply proud to work for Slash Film. And that's even under, you know, new ownership, you know, where there's different people making requests and different priorities and different things being asked of me and a whole lot more work I've ever possibly imagined. I'm still very protective of this website. I'm very protective of the people who work for it. I'm very protective of what it stands for and what it means. And, you know, I feel like, you know, there have been, you know, victories and there have been defeats, but I feel overall that this has been, you know, my life's calling has been to help steer Slash Film be what it is and to keep steering it after Peter, you know, moves on. I mean, if you've been enjoying the site for the past 2 years, you know, we plan to keep it going how it is. And I think we found a really, really good balance in terms of trying to satisfy what we need to satisfy to make it a successful site in 2023, but also keeping alive what I loved about the site, keeping alive what Peter always encouraged us to do, which was be passionate and, you know, love what you love about movies and make sure that's evident, you know, in every article. So that's been my goal. And that goal wouldn't be there if Peter hadn't given me the freedom and the, you know, the flexibility to make that our message and make that our goal. So yeah, the best thing I can say about Peter leaving is that the site will keep being good because he instilled in me the confidence and the trust to be able to, you know, keep his vision alive. And I'm going to miss the hell out of you. Miss the hell out of you, Peter.
Yeah, Brad, you were on board. I think you've known Peter longer than any of us, right?
Yeah, because so I started in this business over at firstshowing.net. You know, I worked for Alex Billington for 6 years. Peter, you know, was really good friends with Alex at the time because Slash Film and First Showing kind of came up together. And Slash Film, you know, had a bigger audience and a bigger draw kind of thing. But Peter and Alex were pretty close at the time. And so I knew Peter pretty early on. He was one of the first, like, major players in, like, the entertainment, you know, journal, blogging, you know, industry at the time that I had met. And so, like, when I started going to Sundance, me and Alex were hanging out with him and Jermaine, and we were at Comic-Con together. And, you know, so there was a lot of that. And I'm super grateful to Peter, because the time came eventually when, like, it looked like I might have to get out of this business, because the advertising money was a little rough over at First Showing. And I was considering getting into teaching high school English. I even did a transition to teaching program and everything. But then I talked to Peter, like, at the last minute to see if there was anything they had. And they were just then considering creating a weekend editor position. And the timing couldn't have been better for me as far as opportunity is concerned, because just a few months after I had joined in the summer of 2015, there was some shifting around when Russ Fisher left and Angie Han got bumped up and became the managing editor. And then me being the weekend editor turned into me also doing a bunch of stuff during the week. Granted, it meant I was working 7 days a week for a long time and I didn't get a proper vacation for the longest time, but it rarely felt like it was, you know, difficult work, just because I've loved what I've done for so long. And, you know, I love that Slash Film and, you know, Peter gave us that freedom to, like, do what we wanted to do, write what we wanted to write about. And I think one thing is I've always appreciated about Slash Film is just the range of, you know, things and how we cover them. You know, we're not just dedicated to blockbusters. We also, you know, champion independent movies, and we focus on TV shows that everybody is talking about that, you know, feel cinematic. And, you know, we've just been able to write so many different stories about so many different things. And I'm very grateful that I was able to stay in this industry and to, you know, stick around through, you know, a couple more eras and be here as it's, you know, the guard has shifted and Jacob has done a fantastic job, you know, shifting as Peter has taken a step back. And it's been a fun ride.
HG, do you have any memories of your early days at Slash Film?
Oh, Peter, how do you feel about feeling even older? So Slash Film, I don't want to say I grew up reading it, but I was reading it through at least my college years, and to see the application open up on Twitter and to actually get the job was kind of a dream come true for me, like right out of college. And I wouldn't be where I am today without Slash Film and being able to work with you guys and be part of this cool generation of Slash Film writers and editors and get to write about whatever I wanted, essentially. Like, I'd just be like, hey, Jacob, can I write about this? And he would essentially say, yeah, sure. So I could write a real thoughtful philosophical essay about a Haruki Murakami adaptation, or I could write about this dumb Fast and Furious knockoff in Bollywood, or I could write about how great Dick Grayson's ass is or something.
It happened.
And, you know, there isn't that kind of freedom in any site anymore. I'm not going to, you know, give away trade secrets or anything, but the ease of with which I got to write about whatever I wanted and basically be a fangirl and write about things I loved, you can't find it anywhere else. Slash Film was the only place and is still the only place, I think. And it feels like right now in this industry when it's also overcrowded and you have to fight for what you want to cover, Slash Film was just like a cool clubhouse to hang out. It was the next evolution of the IMDb forums that I always used to troll when I was in high school. It wasn't like working. Clocking in every day to Slash Film didn't feel like work to me. It felt just like hanging out with some cool movie-loving friends. And that's what I really like about Slash Film. That's what I really miss about it still. And that's what I think Peter will leave in his legacy, and that Jacob and everyone here will be trying to maintain even after he's left his position, which he's not dying. He's just like, I'm leaving forever. But, you know, it's a eulogy of sorts.
Yeah. No, one of the things I love about Slash Film is that, you know, people get to write about what they're passionate about. And also, like, I don't think you see this with many other film sites out there, but the amount of turnover that we've had with the main staff has been so very low. So many people work here for at least 5 years, which if you talk to almost any other site, that's not like what happens. There's, you know, people come and go really quickly. And I like that Slash Film has built up these voices that people come back to hear about, if that makes sense. I will say what I am not going to miss, and I think this is what Brad was mentioning earlier, is, you know, being at the whim of the Google's algorithm and having to manage that and worry about, you know, a recession coming, or, you know, sorry to bring this up, guys, but the dawn of this AI writing stuff that's happening now is like, I would be pooping my pants if I was running it now. So like, I don't know, all that stuff is scary, but what isn't scary is what, the people involved in the site have brought to the table constantly over the years. And I mean, everybody that was on all the main people that were on the site when I sold it are now editors of some kind, right? I mean, including HG, she was, and then she jumped ship to, she's now an Inverse.
Sorry.
But it's fine. I know, I also take pride in that, like, almost everybody that's worked for Slash Film has, like, if they're not here still, they've gone on to become big people elsewhere. Like, and that just, I don't know. I'm very proud of, like, the people that we have that have been part of this.
Yeah, that's all you're doing, Peter. I feel like you really set the template for that. And Chris, I want to give you an opportunity to share anything. Do you have any, like, early memories of your like first little stretch at Slash Film, sort of in that pre-acquisition period?
I mean, I don't know if I have. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like I have no memories. Like, I'm an idiot and I have no memories. But I just want to say, I owe a lot to Peter, and I'm so grateful to Peter, because I was working a really shitty office job that I hated. And I had always wanted to make a living at writing, and I was at a point in my life where I was like, that's never going to happen. I'm going to have to work lousy office jobs the rest of my life. And I was like going to hang up the idea of being a writer. Like, this is it. I'm not really going to be a writer. And Peter gave me a chance, man. He gave me like my dream job that I never thought I would get. So I'm getting emotional right now. So thank you, Peter, for giving me that chance, because I never thought I'd have it. So thank you.
Yeah, man. I
you're making me cry, Chris.
I feel the same way. Like, the, you know, being at Slash Film was literally my dream job. Like, I remember, I've probably said this before, but I remember like filling out forms on the internet where people would, you know, like security forms and stuff, where they'd be like, what's your birthday? What's your favorite website? And like, for as long as I can remember, I would write Slash Film, because it was like a daily part of my life. And then being able to, you know, be a part of the team that actually puts the site together has just been like an incredible experience. And I'm so grateful to Peter for giving me that shot. Like, I had worked for other sites before and was sort of like, you know, an acquaintance with Peter before. So he kind of like knew me from, you know, the scene a little bit, but I really feel like he took a chance on me. And I can't possibly explain to you what that means to me, Peter. So thank you so much for that. And like, you opened the doors of your home to let me in. And like, me and my wife had Thanksgiving with you guys one time. Like, I mean, you've just been like such a great a mentor figure to me and a friend as well. So yeah, thank you so much, Peter. This has been incredible.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's been great too with Peter, is, and maybe sometimes to its detriment, just because like we felt so close, is that like Peter was our boss, but he was also like, you know, our friend. You know, Peter definitely became, well, I was friends with Peter before he became my boss, and that friendship, you know, has carried on. You know, I've stayed at Peter's, you know, house. You know, we've gone to theme parks together and just hung out, and you know, when work wasn't even really involved, you know. And so it was always, you know, great having Peter as my boss and friend. You know, it created like this little close-knit community. You know, it's made it so that probably, you know, working anywhere else will make things difficult whenever that time comes, because, you know, I won't always have a boss that's my friend, you know. And Jacob's, you know, continued, you know, to be a great friend and boss as well. So like, I feel like I've been spoiled for, you know, the past 8 years, and if I ever have to work anywhere else, I who knows what that's gonna be like. It's gonna suck.
Thanks, Brad.
All right, well, let's get into the water cooler part. This is probably what, you know, most listeners want to hear.
Actually,
at this
before
point.
We even get into that, I just want to say that, like, the last 2 years, I mean, I've been part of the site. I've obviously been doing this. If you're listening to this podcast, I've been very involved in this podcast. But a lot of what's been going on the site, Jacob has been shepherding and making everything happen at Static Media. And it's not like things are going to change there. You know, I was involved. I was in the Slack channel giving suggestions and trying to, help the editorial direction. But like the last 2 years have been under Jacob. And so if you've loved Slash Film for the last 2 years, you have nothing to worry about. Jacob's still at the helm. If you didn't like Slash Film for the last 2 years, then write your emails to Static Media. It's their fault. It's not Jacob's fault.
A very, very kind thing to say. So I'm going to respond to it by opening up the Grand Stream Book of Insult, Offense, and Effrontery.
Oh, no.
One more time, just for you, Peter. Peter's getting a jacket for his birthday. The straight kind. Peter has a clean court figure.
Wait, can you explain that one? Is that a homosexual joke?
Like, no. A mental institution, Peter.
Oh, a straight? I was like, is this a really, like...
Peter.
For your birthday, like, you're going crazy.
Straight kind.
All these jokes are out of date, so I don't know. I thought maybe this was a homophobic, like,
well,
kind of...
Here, you have a Supreme Court figure. No appeal. And finally, Peter, you have a very striking face. How many times were you struck there?
Oh, no.
Let's get that Supreme Court one. Who says you have a Supreme Court figure? That's a saying. Like, that's never been a saying, unless it was back in the day of this book. And if it is, I'm sorry.
No one says any of this except for Jacob.
I've missed this book.
I
have a feeling that many times when Jacob reads jokes out of this book, he's the only one in history, other than the author, that's read those jokes out loud.
That might be true.
I sure hope so.
All right, Peter, let's get into it. What have you been doing recently?
What have I been doing? Yesterday, I went on the Universal Studios VIP tour. Universal Studios Hollywood had invited me out, so I did not pay for it. Take that for what it is. But this is, you know, Universal Studios Hollywood is a theme park, but it's also a movie studio. And of course, you can buy tickets, you can buy express passes, but the top of that ladder is the VIP tour, which you have your own personal VIP guy that takes. Well, not your own. I guess there's a group of people, like say like 10 people, and he'll take them, him or her will take you across the Universal Studios. They'll get you on all the rides without having to wait in any lines. You have your own VIP line that gets you to the front. But probably the most interesting thing of all the features is you actually don't go on the regular tram to go around the studio, and you board this private trolley, and you go around the studio, the back lot for, I want to say 2-3 hours, and they will give you the normal studio tour, but at points you'll actually stop and get off the bus and be able to explore areas. And this time I got to finally do it, guys. I got off at Courthouse Square on the Universal back lot, where they shot Back to the Future, they shot Gremlins, many movies, many TV shows over the years. And it's been a dream of mine to actually walk. Actually, it's funny because when you take the studio tour, when you're at Universal Studios, usually it bypasses that whole area because they're constantly filming things there, be it TV shows, commercials, whatnot. So you usually don't even ever see it. I've seen it probably a handful of times in the 100 times I've taken the tour. But we yesterday actually got to go and, you know, walk around the Courthouse Square and learn about it from the guide. And I don't know, it was really cool. We're gonna have a video on it on Ordinary Adventures probably later this week. But the tour runs, I think it starts at like $365 and goes up depending on how busy the day is. But if you're going to go to the park and you're not a local and you don't have an annual pass and you're going to be paying for a ticket and you might even be paying for an express pass, it's not that much money to go up from the express pass to the VIP tour. So I would think it might be worth it. You get lunch, like this very gourmet lunch. You get a continental breakfast. You get after the VIP tour ends, you can go with your badge to any of the rides and go to the express line unlimited. So it was a great experience. And it was fun. Anyways, that's all that I've been doing. Jacob, what have you been doing?
I was on a recent water cooler, so I have nothing super new to add. But I want to bring this up because I know Peter will have something to say, which is with the Star Wars Hotel, the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser officially closing later this year, my sister and my brother-in-law, who went last month and described it as a top five things of their lives experience, they're going to go one more time and have asked me to come. And if the three of us split a room, it becomes a little more cost-effective. So, Peter, I'm going to go do Star Cruiser before it closes. And I know you're a huge fan, so I just wanted to let you know that since you and I will hopefully keep talking about theme park stuff in our own free time. But, I'm going to go. I'm not going to make the mistake of missing it like I did with the Star Trek experience in Las Vegas. So I'm going to go.
I know that you're going to have an amazing time. It's literally the best theme park thing I've ever done. I'm so sad that it's closing, and I'm so sad that most people, you know, probably only 80,000 people will ever experience this before it closes down, which is crazy to me. Like, that's probably the biggest Disney thing that Disney's ever opened that the least amount of people will have ever experienced in this run. But Jacob, you're gonna have a fantastic time. And honestly, Star Cruiser, you mentioned splitting the room. Every single time I've gone, I've split the room. Like last time we stayed in like one of the suites, and we had eight people crammed in there. But I don't want to convince people it's worth money, because it's like, if either you can afford it or you can't. But you know, $1,500 is a lot cheaper than $6,000. Not saying it's cheap, but it's more doable, if that makes sense. But obviously it's not going to be around any longer, so maybe it wasn't doable for most people. And I totally understand that, and I'm sad that it's going away.
Hey, maybe somebody from Disney Parks wants to send the whole Slash Film crew to the Galactic Star Cruiser for one last hurrah.
Now we're talking, Brad.
Plus me?
Yes. Of course, HD, of course.
I want to be the responsible one. My family made this offer to me. It's like, hey, do you want to come split a room? I said to my wife, we can't justify this. That's still expensive. My wife looked me in the eye and said, Jacob, you'll regret for the rest of your life if you don't do this. We're doing it. So she's sending me off to role-play Star Wars for 2 days later this year. So,
Jacob, before you go, please give me a call or text me. I'll have a lot of suggestions and tips and tricks and stuff for you.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, Brad, what have you been up to?
So tell me if this has ever happened to you guys. This is something that happens to me every so often, and it drives me crazy for a small amount of time. And this is the first time I've ever like remembered it at a convenient time to actually talk about it. But every now and then I will have some kind of like visual in my mind that suddenly pops in, or like a line reading from a movie, and I can hear the exact intonation of the line, or I can see the exact framing of the shot and like what's happening in it. And then it takes me forever to place what that moment is from. And it's always some insignificant, tiny thing that I only remember because I've seen a movie a bunch of times, like more times than I probably should. And it's just a silly thing that isn't even like a memorable moment. It's just something that somehow pops in my head. And I'm like, oh my God, what is that from? And yesterday it happened to me. It was the silliest thing. I had a visual in my head of a character in the middle of some kind of hustle and bustle scene. There's a lot of characters in the background doing it. I knew that it was like a newspaper office or a police station. And this character, who was like a nondescript supporting actor, like acknowledges a more important character in the room by holding up like a file folder and like waving it at them and then like setting it down. It was such a quick thing. And like I was racking my brain. It was driving me crazy on and off for like 2 hours, to the point where I couldn't even take a nap. It felt like a weird obsessive compulsive kind of thing. And then I finally honed in on police station stuff. It made me think of The Dark Knight. I recognized a supporting actor's face, and I was like, yeah, that's the guy. And the scene in question, if you want to follow this thread that I recounted on Twitter, it's something that you might not even remember, but it's from The Dark Knight. It's the scene where Rachel is on the phone talking to Harvey Dent, and he's asking her if there's anybody in the, you know, the city that she can trust, because, you know, people in Gordon's unit can't be trusted anymore. And it's just one quick shot where she looks around the room and she sees this actor, Keith Zurabajka, who plays a character named Stevens. He's like a detective, and he just acknowledges by holding up a folder, and like, that's it. And once I finally figured it out, I was like, oh my God, like, I felt such relief. If you want to see like the clip in question, because you don't remember what I'm talking about, it's on a Twitter thread that I posted earlier today. But yeah, so do you guys ever get like moments like that where you get something stuck in your head that you can't remember where it's from?
Brad, are you just describing getting old? I feel like maybe. That just happens to me on a weekly basis. Like earlier in the week, I had a mental fart where I was like, wait, what is Dwayne Johnson's character's name in Moana? And it like took me like 20 minutes to figure it out. I was like, I'm not going to look it up on online. I'm not going to pull up my phone. You know, like, what do you guys think? Is this just getting old, or is this something just everybody experiences?
I mean, I experience this kind of thing all the time, but just not to the degree, the super tiny specific degree that Brad does. Like, I saw that clip, Brad, that you posted, and I was like, oh my God, yeah. Like, how that's so insignificant. Like, why would it ever even remain lodged in your brain at all? But yeah, certain line reads and things like that will sometimes stick in my head. Like, there was, yeah, I'm trying to think of an example and I can't come up with one off the top of my head, but yeah, the things like that happen to me. It's mostly it's line reads instead of like character behavior or something.
Yeah, it was weird and frustrating. But anyway, besides that, I've also been building a lot more Lego sets recently. And I mentioned some of these on the podcast a little while ago because I reviewed them. And there, I do have a cool review of one coming up that I've been building that's taking some time because it's a big one. And it's the Batman Returns Batcave Shadow Box set that was recently announced. I've been building this thing, and it's a huge set with like 30 bags of Legos inside of it. It has four booklets to build it out. But it's a really cool like feat of engineering so far, the way like it folds in on itself, but like still has so many cool details of the Batcave and stuff like that. So I'll have a much closer look at that on Slashfilm here in the near future. But then like, aside from the ones that I've been reviewing, I also, there's a line of Lego cars called Speed Champions. And there's like some kind of digital component to them where like you can have like a game, I think, that uses these Lego cars. But they've been doing some movie cars lately. So they have James Bond's Aston Martin, the classic silver one that recently, you know, was in Skyfall and whatnot. They also have two cars from Fast and Furious. They have Dom's Charger, and then they have Brian's Skyline. So there's been some cool stuff like that I've just been doing on the side too. So I always have like a little like backlog of like three or four Lego sets that I just keep putting off and not building, and then I keep getting new ones because of work, and so I just constantly building Lego sets.
I love how you're blaming it on work and not the fact that you're addicted to Legos.
I mean, it's a little column A, a little column B.
Have there been any sets recently announced that you're like excited about? I saw they announced this Pac-Man arcade set. Did you see that?
I did see that. That's pretty cool. The problem is like it's. I mean, that's one that I would probably have to buy because I don't think I can justify like requesting it to review for the site because like, you know, yeah. It's not really movie related. But yeah, no, that one's definitely a cool one. There have been rumblings of some kind of big Avengers Stark Tower set coming later this year, but it hasn't been officially announced yet. So I'm curious to see what that's going to be like.
OK, we have a lot more to talk about, but we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Okay, we're going to get into what we've been reading. Ben, what have you been reading?
Yeah, I read Heat 2 by Michael Mann and Meg Gardner. Chris talked about this on the podcast when the book originally came out. I think it was last year. And Chris actually wrote a review on the site, and we did an interview with Meg Gardner that was really great and entertaining. And this book is also great and entertaining. I really enjoyed the hell out of this. I won't go too deep into it. You can go back and listen to that full episode where Chris talks a lot about the details of it. But it's a prequel and a sequel to the 1995 movie at the same time. So there are moments where it flashes back, moments where it flashes forward. And because I've seen Heat so many times, because those performances, especially by Al Pacino and Robert De Niro, are so like indelible and burned into my brain, it's so easy to read this book with those characters like appearing in your mind's eye and doing the things that that Mann and Gardner described them doing in this book. So it's really, really, I know that Michael Mann is talking about making Heat 2 into a movie. There's been rumors that like Adam Driver and Austin Butler and maybe even like Ana de Armas or something might show up in, might be cast in the eventual Heat 2 movie. But even if they never make the movie, I feel like I've already seen it, like the real version in my head, because this book is so well-written and so, like evocative. And those characters, like I said, were so indelible the first time around that it just really feels like picking up the baton and jumping back in. And the prose is really interesting. Chris, I don't know if you had this feeling where like it's the writing is like really staccato. It's like really short sentences and like really feels punchy and sort of masculine. Have you thought much about Heat 2, Chris, after you read it that first time?
I mean, it doesn't like consume my every waking thought, but yeah, I really dug it. And I'm a little skeptical it will work as a movie just because the timeline is so weird, but
yeah.
If they make it a movie, I'll sure as hell watch it. But I thought it was great. It was a fun, very quick read too. You can like finish that in like 2 days, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris Chehurlis, the character that Val Kilmer played, is one of the main characters of the book. And a lot of it takes place after the events of the movie. And like recasting that role, actually recasting all of these roles is going to be a little tough, like for the post Heat part of the story, just because, like I said, those characters are, you know, those actors are those characters in my mind. They did such a great job breathing life into them that it's going to be tough to recapture cinematically with somebody else in those parts. But yeah, if they actually end up making this thing, I'll definitely be there on day one as well. So that's what I've been reading.
Not to derail Ben's very thoughtful analysis of Heat 2, but since I haven't been, you know, tapped into what the goings on have been at Slash Film, I'm very curious as to where the Slash Film team fell in the great De Niro versus Pacino hotness debate.
It's clearly Pacino. I mean, Robert De Niro was a good-looking dude back in the day, but Al Pacino as a young man was beautiful.
I have the definitive answer. So young Pacino is hotter than young De Niro, but older De Niro is hotter than older Pacino. That is the answer, and I stand by it.
This is incredibly true.
I disagree with both of you because I was on Team De Niro, but I think of the standard definition of hotness, De Niro applies, but Pacino was beautiful. That's where the difference is. No one can disagree with me because no one's saying anything.
No, because you're right. Al Pacino looked like Al Pacino has a Paul McCartney thing going, whereas Robert De Niro looks like a guy who fixes sinks. So that's how it all falls for me.
Yeah, he's football player hot, De Niro was. And, you know, Pacino was a twink, a beautiful one.
I don't know. I think both of them kind of looked weird when they were younger. I don't know. That's just me.
Peter, okay. That is Italian-American discrimination. How dare you?
No, but I think that part of the reason why they were cast in the roles that they were cast is they were unique looking. They weren't like sex symbols. No.
Yeah, a lot of actors.
It all depends on who you ask, really. Everyone's
real handsome. We're back in the day.
The number of people who voted in that poll on Twitter, like I think it was 270,000. I feel like people would disagree with you, Peter, but it is his own.
Okay, Jacob, what have you been reading?
Yeah, on the water cooler earlier this week, I talked about six books I had read over the past few months. I realized I forgot one that I also squeezed in, and that is Answers in the Form of a Question by Claire McNear. It was published a few years ago. I think it came out literally days before Alex Trebek died. This definitive book about the history of Jeopardy and what it's like to be a Jeopardy contestant and the experience of being on the show and how people prepare and how to change their lives. Like literally days later after it came out, Trebek died. And my thought was, well, it's instantly out of date, so I didn't read it. But the new paperback edition updates it. It has a new final chapter that talks about the post-Trebek legacy and the battle over the hosting chair. And Claire McNear, who wrote the book, also, she was the one who broke the story about the Jeopardy producer who tried to steal the hosting job for himself. So she's able to get like all the inside scoop for her own book. Yeah, and if you're a Jeopardy fan, this book is a treasure trove of stories and anecdotes about the game and how it changed and full of all the information I ever need to know that I should never be on Jeopardy ever, because it is somebody who plays along at home when I watch Jeopardy, and I do okay. I always thought, like, maybe I could really bone up, maybe do a lot of research and a lot of, like, you know, homework and be ready to compete in Jeopardy one day. But the amount, the physical stamina and timing it takes to be good at Jeopardy, be able to recall as fast as you can and to click in at the right, buzzing at the right time, the amount of dozens and hundreds of hours of physical training that contestants, that successful contestants do to be good at Jeopardy from the physical point of view, it has turned me off of ever being on Jeopardy for real forever. So I'll keep on playing a couch player for the rest of my life. Thank you, Claire McNear, for letting me know the truth.
Okay. HT, what have you been reading?
Well, speaking of twinks, I read for the first time Andre Asiman's Call Me By Your Name. I was just in a Call Me By Your Name mood recently. I don't know. I've been listening to the soundtrack, and I hadn't read the book yet, and I had long been intending to get around to it. So I picked it up. It's a very short read. It's only, I think, like 200, 300 pages. And it's a really, really beautiful, really lyrical read. Much more stream of consciousness than I had anticipated it being. It's much more like just the thoughts of Timothée Chalamet's character in the movie Elio, and his like very stream of consciousness reactions and experiences upon meeting what would be this great first love. And it's fantastic. I really, really enjoyed reading it. It's very lyrical in a way that felt like it wouldn't be adaptable to a screen, but I think Luca Guadagnino's film actually does a really good job of capturing that spirit. While there's like a, you know, poetic lyricism to the book, there's a sort of visual lyricism to the movie, which I think does really well. And there's a lot of lines ripped straight from the book. I knew already that the monologue by Michael Storbuk's character was basically word for word, but a lot of other lines were just like word for word right in the movie. And I was really happy to see that. So yeah, I really enjoyed reading it. And I would recommend it to anyone who is a fan of the movie, or maybe just wants a sweet, sometimes perverse, sometimes sweet, silly and slight, but really just wonderful little summer read.
Okay, we're going to move on to what we've been watching, and I'll start things off with... Well, I saw Fast X at the theater last week when it came out on Friday. I think we kind of discussed that at length in the spoiler discussion earlier this week. But I liked it. I thought it was dumb and fun, and I loved that Jason Momoa was just... He knew the assignment that he had been hired for. He was just like so over the top. But I did want to mention that was, guys, I'm very last minute. Like, I don't plan things out. I'm very last minute, especially with like booking a ticket to the movie theater. So I have AMC A-list, and at the last minute we decided to go to the movies like probably like within an hour or two of the showtime. So I grabbed seats. They weren't even great seats. They were off to the side because, you know, we had to get what we were available. And the two people sitting next to us throughout the entire movie were on their phones, like watching TikToks, going through their Instagram, barely ever like looking up at the screen. They would talk to each other. I'm so against, I'm so, bad at conflict or like whatever. So like it took me like 30 minutes of this to be like to even say anything, but I like looked at them and I was like, can you be a little quieter? There's a movie going on or whatever. It was like, so not even me like saying, you know, being a very confident approach to them. But have any of you ever like encountered that where like you have people next to you that literally are on their phones the entire movie?
That happened to me recently and it pissed me off. I was so mad. And it was during a movie that I was, you know, it wasn't, you know, I was watching Air, which I actually enjoyed more than I thought I would. But there was this girl next to me who was just on her phone the entire time, you know, like watching TikToks, online shopping. And I was just like, I was being really annoying at one point. I was like looking over and be like, just kind of being like very intentional, just staring at her, but I also don't like confrontation, so I didn't say anything, but I was pissed off. Is this a more usual thing? I think this is just a Gen Z thing, right? That they can't say.
But why were they even
so
at the
long.
Theater, HT? Like, at one point, I like looked over at them and like they were sharing, like there was a one of them was showing the other, like the woman that Jason Momoa is going out with, I think. It's like a picture on a red carpet, and he was like, I don't know, it's just like, what is going on? Anyways, I'm sure that's why more people are watching movies at home or whatnot. But anyways, the other thing I wanted to mention in what we've been watching is that I discovered this new YouTube channel. I watch a lot of YouTube. I discovered this channel out of a recommendation on Twitter, and the channel is called Jetlag the Game. And this is about a group of young guys that go on the... Jacob, you would like this. This is like a total recommendation for Jacob. They do series, and it's kind of like... oh my God, what is that game, that reality game show where they're running around the world?
The Amazing Race.
Amazing Race, yes. It's like that, but more gamified. More for like, if you're a tabletop gamer, like they have like a deck of cards that they pull out like challenges. There's like different powers that they can gain if they like do certain things and earn them. The latest one I watched was they did this game of tag that was across the entire country. And it's so much fun. It's hard to explain what it is without actually going and watching it. But I'll actually link in the show notes the first part of the tag one, because I think that's a good intro to it. But I highly recommend it. It's called Jetlag the Game. The thumbnails make it look like it's like something for like little kids, like it's like a Mr. Beast thing, but it's totally not that. It's totally something you could binge watch, and I think they even like have a deal with Nebula to give you an idea, because Nebula is the service that has some really smart people on it, like Patrick Wilhelm and stuff like that. So it's not like the super dumb for little kids kind of thing. But Jetlag the Game. Jacob, what have you been watching?
Well, funny you should bring up The Amazing Race, because a few months ago I talked about this being the new show that my wife and I were binging during the extreme discomfort and stress of our move. We were just in a house full of boxes. Our move had been delayed numerous times. We were stressed. Nothing was going right. It took a long time for us to pull out of that really awful, stressful move. And throughout it all, we watched The Amazing Race on Paramount Plus, the reality show. It's been running, you know, for many, many years now, since 2001-ish. And I'm happy to report we're now in season 34, which is the most recent season that aired late last year. So 34 seasons of television in a few months. And unfortunately, season 34 is very bad. They're filming it under severe COVID restrictions, which means that they have to be very careful where they go, what kind of challenges that they give contestants. It's all outdoors, so they can't go indoors anymore. It's a lot of dumb obstacle courses and nothing to do with the place where they actually are, because they're just trying to, you know, keep people in fields instead of, you know, inside tight cities and alleys and shopping areas. The show's in an extreme rough patch. You're kind of struggling to finish season 34. But you were all here when we started it on this podcast. Like, at least you'd be people at home listening to this. And now we're all caught up. So Amazing Race is a really, really good junk food comfort TV if you are stressed and just need a show where people are running around the world yelling at each other and occasionally being very heartwarming and real. So, yeah, don't regret a single second of watching 34 seasons of The Amazing Race. But more importantly, the season finale of BattleBots premiered today on Discovery Plus. And I talked about BattleBots on this podcast before. I've written about it on the site. But it's still the best show that nobody talks about outside the handful of people who watch BattleBots on Discovery Plus. It is the great British baking show of shows where people build robots to fight each other. Although this season's been very different and interesting, because for the first time there was a true villain team, which sounds silly, but in past years the show was edited to, you know, certain teams to be like, you know, the dominant villain type, a character everybody's scared of, or somebody who like maliciously destroys everybody else's robots and like it seems unstoppable. But if you do even like 10 seconds of research, you learn that those people in real life, they're all friends, they all like each other, they all hang out together. It's a super small, you know, world of combat robotics. And like the people who are portrayed as villains on the show are in real life helping other teams fix their robots or help them source parts if they can't find them and are being really good people. Unfortunately, this season of BattleBots introduced a new team full of entirely very, very young people who are brand new to the sport, and they're the worst, the absolute worst, and so bad that and so insulting to their teammate, to the fellow competitors, and so there have been numerous accusations of cheating, of foul play. Rather infamously, one battle against them ended with the other team refusing to shake their hand, which never happens at BattleBots. Everybody always shakes hands. They always shake hands after every fight, guys. This is really important information. And so the problem is that the robot is extremely good, like devastatingly, scarily good. And it's made this season, which used to be my comfort food watch, into a very stressful experience as they keep on winning. So I'm not going to spoil the season finale today. I've watched it. I know who ultimately goes down, who is this year's grand champion. But I will say that if you're interested in watching how one team can turn a comfort food watch into a high stress scenario, the most recent season of BattleBots on Discovery Plus, it'll ruin your life.
Wow. Okay. Brad, what have you been watching?
So since there's a new iteration of Clone High that is now available on Max, I decided to finally dig into the original Clone High, which I had never watched. It was on at a time when like I didn't really pay much attention to like TV shows. I didn't record anything. We didn't have a DVR because around the time the show was on, it was still too early to have one without paying exorbitant amounts of money for TiVo. And so I never watched Clone High, but I've always known that it's from Phil Lord and Chris Miller and Bill Lawrence, who have done a bunch of things that I love. And the concept sounded hilarious and perfectly up their alley. So I finally started watching it, and it's just so much absurd fun. I didn't realize that it really tapped into the style of like high school teenage drama that MTV shows were known for at the time that it came out, but just done in this absurd animated comedic style. It has such a great voice cast with it, including Phil Lord and Chris Miller themselves. Will Forte is part of it. There's also just random, very tiny, inexplicably small cameos from people. Like Michael J. Fox has a very small cameo as Gandhi's kidney at one point. Like it's like a quick cutaway, and like I saw in the credits that it was Michael J. Fox. I was like, what? How do you even get Michael J. Fox to do something like that for the show? But it's a lot of fun. I'm interested to finish it so that I can catch up and watch the new version, which I've heard is great. So Clone High, it's good.
Yeah, I love Clone High. Clone High was like so ahead of its time. It's a shame.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously
sure.
it's coming back, so I mean that's good. So what do you think of the new one? Hasn't come out right yet, right?
I think it just came out when Max launched earlier this week. So I think it should be out there now.
Ah, okay. HT, what have you been watching?
I watched for the first time Contact, the 1997 movie directed by Robert Zemeckis. I'd never seen it before. And I had been curious about it just mostly by virtue of that one scene that is pretty famous for, the mirror shot in which Jodie Foster's young self runs to get medicine from a cabinet. And it turns out that the camera is reflecting through the – or is shooting through the mirror itself. And it's like this fun bit of movie magic – wizardry that is I've watched a lot of videos on, and I was like, I should watch this movie that it's based off of. And I was actually a little bit surprised by this film because it's such an interesting, a very ambitious attempt to make this very philosophical, more cerebral first contact kind of film, but it's made in a way that still very much feels like it fits the parameters of a 90s blockbuster, if that makes sense, like a 90s major, you know, release. So it's like this very interesting dichotomy. It's not art house, but it's also not quite a blockbuster because it's interesting. Anyways, I don't know if I'm like making sense right now, but I watched it just last night and I was kind of wrapping my head around where it succeeds and where it fails. But I liked it. Jodie Foster's incredible in it. Matthew McConaughey, weirdly cast. And of course, it very much is sort of that turning point of Robert Zemeckis having his obsession with technology sort of taking over his own filmmaking vision, which I found also very interesting to see. Does anyone have any opinion about Contact?
I love Contact. Contact is actually my favorite Robert Zemeckis movie, which I'm sure people will think
over Back to the Future?
Absolutely. I love Contact. Contact is one of like the smartest blockbusters ever made. It deals with really heavy themes of, you know, religion and science and philosophy. And you could not get away with making that movie today on that scale. Like, I hate Forrest Gump, but I'm thankful to Forrest Gump for giving Zemeckis the, like, that movie was such a, that and Back to the Future obviously like gave him so much clout that he could just do whatever he wanted. And he did Contact, which no, you could never do that today on this scale. And then Robert Zemeckis slowly lost his mind and made really bad movies. But I'm thankful for Contact.
Can I ask everyone a Zemeckis question? Sure. Because we just did our Slash on Top 100 list, and Back to the Future and Who Framed Roger Rabbit both made the list. So clearly we're Zemeckis fans here when he's actually on his A game. I agree that Contact is probably his third best after those two. But on certain days, I have a very strong admiration for Beowulf, the second of his three, you know, mocap animated movies. But only after I properly studied Beowulf and, like, learned how Zemeckis subverted that story and reconceived it in a way that is really scholarly and interesting and is more of a commentary on Beowulf itself than an adaptation of Beowulf. So that's how I approached and learned to like that movie. So I'm curious, how do people feel about Beowulf these days beyond me?
I can't get past that animation. If that were a live action movie with the same script, I think like Neil Gaiman worked on the script. Like if it had the same script and even the same cast, if it was just live action, I'd be like, this is good, but I cannot get beyond that animation.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I think I would appreciate it a lot more if it wasn't that motion capture animation with the lifeless glass eyes. It's just too distracting, and I just can't get into it.
But isn't at the same time admirable that in the mid-2000s, Zemeckis said, what if adult animation? What if a movie for adults using animation, and didn't try to tone it down for kids or add fart jokes? Beowulf is a film for adults using animation. And yeah, it's glass-eyed and it's dated. But I have to admire it because it was doing what so many of us are crying out for these days, which is animation as a medium being used to tell different kinds of stories and not just, this, you know, family films. So I don't know. I feel like Beowulf deserves some kind of second look these days. I'm being crazy. We were talking about Contact. Why am I bringing this up?
I think I would agree with that more if there weren't a lot better adult animation options on television that were doing that kind of storytelling infinitely better.
No love for Castaway here, huh?
Good. I like Castaway.
Yeah, I like Castaway.
I think that's like his last good movie, honestly. Like everything after that is not good. So that's like his last enjoyable film.
Welcome to Marwen or Flight?
Oh my God. I reviewed Welcome to Marwen, and that was like the worst. It was so bad. Like, shockingly bad movie. Anyway, Contact is good.
Contact is good. I hope my assessment of it doesn't make it seem like I disliked it, but I liked it a lot. And I really liked, how ambitious it was and how much it tried to and did tackle ideas about philosophy and religion and science and how that all kind of comes together at the head in what Interstellar basically tried to do in its big climactic finale.
Yeah, I loved Contact. I haven't watched it in a few years. I wonder how much or how it plays nowadays. I'd like to, maybe I should revisit it.
It's leaving back soon, by the way, so need to watch it soon.
Watch it soon. I remember there was this awesome shot, I think early on in the movie, where Jenna Malone plays young Jody, and she's running towards this, like, the mirror in the bathroom.
Yeah, that's the shot that HD was talking about in the
editing. Yeah. That shot is just so, like, I remember when I got the DVD, I would just watch that shot over and over again, trying to figure out how exactly you do that shot.
I had seen Contact a bunch of times by the time that, like, the clip of that went viral and people were talking about it, because it's done so seamlessly, I never actually realized that it was a trick shot or anything like that. It's like it's done so well, and that you don't even notice like what's happening, that I never even thought, oh wow, how did they do this? And then when I saw that, I was like, oh yeah, that's an incredible shot.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to what we've been eating. You know, before Brad talks, I wanted to tell you about something I discovered recently. I've been trying to drink more water. I've been trying to lose some weight, and you know, not drinking even diet soda is helpful in losing weight. And one thing I discovered is, well, I don't like to drink water because there's no flavor to water. And then once you add flavor to water, you have like vitamin water zero or something like that. Then you basically add the same sweeteners that are in diet soda. So what's, you know, if you're trying to get rid of diet soda, what's the point of adding drinking, you know, those kind of like flavored waters? You should be just drinking water. But again, I don't like unflavored water. It just, I need something full of flavor in it. And I discovered through, I think, an Instagram ad or something, this thing called Air Up, which is this bottle that you put water into, and you buy these scented pods that go over the where the straw where you suck up the water from. And the interesting thing here is it doesn't add flavor to the water, but the pods have a smell, and while you suck up the water, it's almost like, have you ever like sucked up a liquid through a straw and it feels like the straw has a hole in it? So you get like these air bubbles while you're sucking. It's not a constant stream. It's like that, but in the air bubbles, it puts the scent. So like right now I have a berry scent on there. So it puts the scent in the water, and your brain, while you're drinking this water, because the water in your mouth is going to your nose, it makes you think the water has like a hint of like it's been infused with, it's not like a strong flavor. It's more of like maybe like if you've ever had hint water where it's like infused water, that's what it tastes like. But it's literally only because it's tricking your brain into you're smelling it inside of the water rather than actually drinking a flavored water.
This sounds like voodoo magic.
It's weird. It's really weird. But I wanted to put it on people's radar. I like it. It's Air Up. Brad, what have you been eating?
I'm just going to mention one thing because I talked about the Sweets and Snacks Expo yesterday that I went to in Chicago. And so this is somewhat of a movie-related thing. There's that new Wonka movie coming out with old Timmy Chalamet as Willy Wonka. And Brock's is likely getting in on the Willy Wonka crossover opportunity there because they're coming out with a new candy that is Wonka Magic Hat gummies, and they're basically like a fruit snack texture gummy, but they have this like blue goo inside of it, so it's kind of a little bit like a gusher, but it's shaped like Willy Wonka's top hat, and they're pretty good. They're thankfully the sample that I had. The problem that I have with gushers is that when you get them, sometimes a couple of them have been smushed and it makes the rest of the gushers super sticky. Thankfully, that didn't happen with the sample that I had. It probably will happen with some of the regular bags because they'll inevitably get smushed in boxes and on shelves. But these were good because the goop hadn't come out of it yet. And so the flavor of both the fruit snacks and the goo inside was pretty good. So if you're a Willy Wonka fan and you like gummies, there's a good tasty snack themed to Willy Wonka coming out later this year. So look out for those.
Who owns the Wonka candy brand?
Brock's. Brad?
Willy Wonka owns it, Peter. He has a whole factory and kids go in there and get killed. Didn't you see the movie? Oh, jeez.
I do feel like Wonka as a candy brand used to produce a lot more stuff when I was a child. And nowadays, I just feel like the same nerds and variations of nerds. Brad, why do you think that is?
I mean, they've been sticking by a lot of their like signature candies that have been around for a while. Like I think that with the new movie coming out, they're going to start doing some newer stuff. But yeah, I mean, honestly the market is just like so saturated. But I think like a lot of people don't even realize too like what other like candies are actually Wonka candies, like Sweet Tarts and Laffy Taffy. Like those are all Wonka candies. So. And they're all actually, you know, it's not. I just realized it's I don't think it is Brock's. It might be Nestle that owns Wonka. I don't know. Yeah, but it's there's plenty of Wonka stuff out there, and there'll be some new stuff coming along too.
Okay, we have reached the end of today's Slash Film Daily. Jacob, did you want to plug the top 100 movies of all time? I know we mentioned it earlier.
Well, I know that people who listen to this podcast every day heard the making of that list. They heard two episodes of me, Ben, Brad, and BJ butting heads over what made the top 100. But yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, it went live on Monday, and many writers and editors contributed to it. I'm extremely proud of that list. I'm extremely proud of how it reflects what I think is, you know, Slash Film's tastes. You know, are there blind spots on it? Absolutely. Are there parts of it that frustrate me that couldn't get certain names on there? Yes. Do I think there's too many Spielbergs on it? Yes, I do still, Brad.
Well, you're wrong. You're wrong, and everybody else agrees.
I think it's even if you don't agree with us, that's the top 100 movies of all time. I don't even agree with that top 100 movies of all time, but I do agree that it's a list of 100 movies that are all really great. So the written version is on... Just literally go to /film.com/best-movies-ever, and you will find it.
And to tie the conversation around, too, back to Peter, since this is his final podcast and he's leaving Slash Film, there were many times during this podcast that your name was mentioned because, like, we were like, we can't have a Slash Film list without this movie. Otherwise, Peter will turn over in his grave when he dies.
Well, that's so kind. I'm going to miss you guys. And by you guys, I mean, you know, everybody on this podcast, but I also missing, I mean, everybody that is listening out there, everybody that's read the site over the years. And obviously I'm now going to be a reader of the site. I mean, I have been a reader of the site, but not be in the factory behind the scenes, seeing how the nerds are made. I'm going to be, you know, reading on the site like everybody else. But I'm going to miss everybody. If you want to follow my future adventures, you know, obviously I'm not going and creating another movie site or anything like that. You can find me at /film at Peter Serretta on all social media. You can follow my YouTube channel, Ordinary Adventures, on YouTube. But that's how you could, if you want to stay up to date with me and my ramblings, and I'm still going to be, you know, tweeting about movies and theme parks and food and all sorts of stuff. So that's where you can find me.
And hopefully we can figure out a way to get you back when we are recapping Marvel and Star Wars shows and stuff like that, because I feel like it wouldn't be the same. Maybe you can just go on and be a special guest.
We'll see, Brad. We'll see.
Peter's like, nope, Peter's I'm out. Like, I'm not watching any more shows.
Hey, if you guys want me, I'll come back. But we'll see. Anyways, you can find more of all of our work at slashfilm.com. Well, actually, that's not true. You can find HT. HT, where can we find you?
You can find me at inverse.com. So no longer slashfilm.com either.
Yeah.
But technically, yeah, you can still find HT's work at slashfilm.com.
Yes, just work from last year and previously.
It'll live on forever. So you can subscribe to this podcast in Apple, Google, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. Please send us your feedback, questions, comments, concerns to us at... Ben, what is the email that we're going to be using here? Because it's probably not going to be peter@slashfilm.com anymore.
Yeah, that's true. You can just send it to me. bpearson@slashfilm.com.
At bpearson@slashfilm.com. And please head on over to our Apple podcast page. Give us a rating. Write us a review. Tell your friends. Spread the word. And we'll see you on Monday.
We'll always have Penn and Teller fool us, Peter. Oh,
God. I knew I wasn't going to get through this episode without you bringing that up.
One of the greatest moments ever.
Yes. We're not getting the book again, are we?
Oh, no. I both busted out early when you were saying nice things. Yeah. It's an opportunity. But okay. People still mention the Penn and Teller debate to me at film festivals. Say, hey, Jacob, please come to the site. Penn and Teller fool us, am I right?
Penn and Teller fool us, am I right? What a way to go.
That's my legacy.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.